Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I am David Suchet, and this is Blood Ties.
For the last 17 years, we've been having lunch every Saturday, but now we bring you true crime stories from lockdown. This is Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wantzel, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wantzel.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. It's been a long spring. We're just getting into Midsummer's Day, and it seems to be in a long road.
It has, hasn't it? Yeah. Longest day tomorrow.
Longest day and the summer solstice and all that.
Downhill till Christmas is what Jeffrey would normally say after Wimbledon. There's no Wimbledon. But.
No. We haven't even had any cricket yet. It's absolutely distressing.
Well, we're going to get some cricket, so it's not all bad, Dad.
No, we're going to get a little bit. But I'm, as I always say, and we're so grateful to you all for listening and for participating in this extraordinary and wonderful podcast.
Oh, yeah. On that note, I have a person I need to say a shout out to on Instagram. Hold on one second, please, listeners, while I get to said message.
No, I want to know too. I don't look at the Instagram feed, but Molly's the mistress of Instagram and Twitter.
I want to give a shout out to Daisy West. Hello, Daisy, and your mother, Helen. Daisy, I'm sorry that we didn't reply about asking whether we could cover Gypsy Rose Blanchard, but we'll put it on the list and have a look.
We will.
At doing that next time.
Yeah.
And I hope you are both very well.
Yes, me too. Thank you for your... And we will certainly put it on the list of possibles. There are quite a lot of those, actually.
I know. We're very grateful for you all making suggestions because it makes our job easier, finding things. Well, not Jeffrey's, yes, because he has to do all the work on it, but mine.
Well, I still think it's wonderful that you respond so positively and, you know, say what you think. And it makes a huge, huge difference to both Molly and I.
Yeah, it does indeed. It does. Yeah, we mentioned at the end of the last podcast, didn't we, that this is going to be our last one for this season. We've done 10 lockdown podcasts plus one sort of interim one, and Jeffrey did two on his own.
Yes, I think we've done 13 lockdown podcasts.
Yeah. So we're going to take a bit of a break.
But we're not leaving you completely. We are very loyal.
No. Well, we're still here. Just a small break, a small sojourn. But yeah, we might try and release some of those unreleased podcasts that we recorded a long time ago. But we'll have to have a listen and see if we don't sound completely stupid, because it was some time ago.
Yeah, 2.5 years. Believe it or not.
Yeah. Well, it will be three, actually, because I think we recorded those I came up with the idea in May, and I think that we did those tests in like July and August.
Yeah, it's 3 years then. Amazingly enough.
Yeah. Oh, time
dear.
Flies.
Don't tell me. It's my birthday soon, and that's bad enough.
It is nearly
yes,
your birthday.
It is. Oh, dear.
Not long.
Oh, dear.
Not long. I've already thought about what to get you, so that's gone well
good.
For me.
I'm not making any comment. I think we should also explain that today's podcast, this podcast, was really suggested to us by our producer, Poppy Damon.
Yeah.
Because of the sudden resurgence of interest in the case of the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. And Poppy thought... What did Poppy think, Mo?
No, she thought it would be a good idea for us to just review the case. Because it was a while ago, and it's interesting just to go back and look over the actual facts of what happened. As Jeffrey will tell you, there is a lot... There are a lot of strands, there are a lot of theories, there's a lot of, you know, we just want to, well, we'll go through it, but mainly just to go back and just refresh our memories as to what happened.
Yes, I think that I think Poppy was quite right. It was, it is a fascinating case. It attracted worldwide attention, and has never really gone away. It was 13 years ago when Madeleine McCann disappeared, and yet it still resonates around the world, and it is a remarkable story. And
We should probably
so
do it.
You know, it seemed to me, really, by way of explanation, we hadn't originally conceived of doing Madeleine McCann. But
no, we were doing a different episode, but we've done a change up to the original programming.
Yeah. And inspired by Poppy, which only goes to show that we do take what our producer says very seriously, and we.
And we'd be absolutely in deep trouble without her.
So that's a shout out to Poppy Damon, our producer, from us.
Yes, very much. Thank you, Poppy.
Right. Well, shall we begin?
Let's get going. Okay. Well, here we go with the disappearance of Madeleine McCann.
Madeleine McCann was actually born and christened Madeleine Beth McCann on the 12th of May 2003. In Leicester, where her parents were working. She would, as anyone can tell you, not least the most famous photograph of all, her holding the three tennis balls, the three yellow tennis balls, wearing a hat. She was small, blonde-haired, blue-green eyes, with a very distinctive dark slip on the iris of her right eye. If you look at any of the documentaries, it is one of her most distinctive features. You look at her right eye and there's a dark, it's a mark. It's fascinating. And I became even more aware of it because over the last week, I've watched every one of the 8-hour-long episodes that Netflix made of the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. Let's come back to whether we think that was good or worthy or wise at the end. However, let's go back to her mum and dad. Kate McCann was born Healy, Kate Healy, in Highton, near Liverpool, in 1968. She got a degree in 1992 in medicine from Dundee University. Gerry McCann was born in Glasgow, also in 1968, and qualified in medicine in 1992. He became, in fact, and still is, a consultant cardiologist in Glenfield Hospital in Leicester. They live in a little village not very far from Leicester. They met together in Glasgow in 1993 and eventually married, not quickly, they married in 1998. They are both devout Catholics, and they clearly thought that the most important thing for a newly married Catholic couple was to have a child. It did not prove to be as easy as they had hoped. But it made Madeleine's birth in 2003 all the more special. She was absolutely treasured. And I think it's important to remember that as the story unfolds. She was very, very precious indeed. They went on, ironically, as so often happens, one child arrives and all of a sudden, not long afterwards, they have twins. So now they've got Madeleine, the eldest, and twins. They are close to a number of friends in the area, some of them doctors, some of them not. And in the summer of 2007, in fact, it really wasn't quite the summer, it was late April, a group of them, 7 adults and 8 children, including the McCann's 3, decide to go on holiday to Praia da Luz on the Algarve in Portugal. Now, the Algarve is the bottom bit of Portugal, if you're looking at a map, and Praia da Luz is right towards the west end, so it's really near the tip of Portugal. It's a holiday complex called the Ocean Club, run by a British company called Mark Warner, and is sometimes known in the locality as Little Britain because it attracts a great many British holidaymakers.
It was probably like an all-inclusive sort of hotel, I'd imagine.
Sort of, but they booked a table, as becomes very significant, in a tapas restaurant beside the pool and just down from there.
Yeah, but as a devotee of all-inclusive resorts, as you know I am, you do book to go to the special restaurants when you're there, even though they are part of the deal. Okay. So it's just because they're like slightly more exclusive, so you've got to get booked in.
Okay, well, anyway, they get there in late April, and I think there was some, how can one put it, there was some reservations about going. I think they were all quite busy, but then they decided they'd get to go now because they're going to be busy in the, you know, in May and June, and, oh, let's get a holiday in quickly. And so they take off from East Midlands Airport, EasyJet, to Faro and turn up at the complex, the Ocean Club. Kate and Jerry have got an apartment, 5A, on the ground floor of a block, which looks down towards the swimming pool and the restaurant, the tapas restaurant. It's got patio doors, it's got shuttered windows, it's perfectly reasonable. All the kids are in one room, Madeline's got a single bed, and the twins are in cots, travelling cots, in one room. Next door, Madeline and Kate and Jerry have got two single beds pushed together. It's a perfectly ordinary, commonplace. Thousands upon thousands of holidaymakers have been through this particular complex. Now we get to May the 3rd. It's the penultimate day of the holiday. They fly back the following day. It's a perfectly normal day. But I ought to give you a little bit of background. The complex itself, over the previous month or so, has seen a number of strange events. Attempted burglaries, rather bullying, quotes, charity collectors banging on the door, demanding money rather aggressively. And make very much difference. On the morning of the 3rd of May, so legend has it, Madeline says to her mum, "Why didn't you come last night when the twins and I were crying?" Which was a slightly strange remark because, as far as Kate knew, she hadn't heard them crying. This becomes significant as the story unfolds. Anyway, it's a perfectly ordinary day. The last picture of Madeline and Jerry is sitting by the pool, sitting beside each other on the edge of the pool. Jerry goes off for a tennis lesson because one of the things that comes in the deal is there's a tennis lesson. There's also a creche, but the McCanns decided that they didn't want to put the kids in the creche. They'd be fine in the apartment. It was only a matter of, you know, minutes, you know, literally across the pool and a little bit of a step up the road. And so they'd be perfectly safe in the apartment. So they, you know, Kate and Jerry put the kids to bed about 7. And at 8:30, they meet up with what became known famously as the Tapas 7 at the table that they have reserved for the last few nights. Again, a piece of significant information. There was a note on the table which said, "Booked for the McCanns and party for the last 4 nights." This becomes significant because there have been some suggestions that people knew precisely what their movements were and knew exactly when they were going to go to supper and knew exactly when they were going to look for their children. This is significant. Okay, it's 8:30. They, you know, a couple of bottles of wine, they order. But at 9:00, Jerry gets up, walks back to the apartment, goes inside. They haven't locked the patio doors. This, again, will become significant because they didn't want to go through the front door. They want to go through the patio. Jerry goes in, opens the door to the kids' room. It's a perfect father moment. All the kids are happy and asleep. There's absolutely nothing to worry about. They're all fine. He goes back to the tapas restaurant. About 20 minutes or so later, one of their friends, Jane Hunter, says, oh, I'll go, because Kate was going to go. And she said, no, don't worry, leave it to me. I'll go because I'm going to go and look at my kids as well. So she goes out. And what became known as the famous Tanner sighting, a man is walking across the top of the street with his, just where the apartment is, with a small child wearing pajamas, asleep, quotes, in his arms. She doesn't think anything about it particularly, goes in, looks at the McCann children, but doesn't go into the room. This becomes more significant as the story unfolds. At around 10, Kate McCann returns to apartment 5A to check on the children. This time, she opens the door and notices that the shutter by the window in the room is raised. And then, to her horror, literally, notices that Madeline isn't asleep in the single bed to her left of the door. The twins are sound asleep. Kate McCann runs back to the tapas bar shouting, they've taken Madeline. Who they were is still a matter of speculation. But those were the words she used. And shortly afterwards, a reception is told that Madeline's gone. And at 20 past 10, the local police, the Gendarmerie of Portugal, the GNR, arrive. By this point, everybody is in a hubbub. I mean, there are guests have been alerted. It's a big deal. In the Ocean Club, a search is initiated. No criticism here of the GNR, the local gendarmerie, but the crime scene, for that is what it became, was heavily contaminated. People were tramping in and out of it, policemen, other guests, friends of the McCanns. There was no tape. You know, nowadays we would think of it as absolutely obvious. You must preserve a crime scene. I think originally a lot of people were convinced that the little girl had simply gone walkabout. Maybe she'd gone walk down to the sea or got up, went to try and find her mum and dad. You know, well, she's just wandered off. But gradually, a lot of people then started to search the local, both the complex, the beach, the pool, the tennis courts, the whole local Ocean Club complex, and no sign of her. Well, they operated a missing child protocol, and about 60 staff and guests launched a search. All over Praia da Luz, you could hear people calling Madeline's name. Madeline, where are you there? Madeline, you know, literally. And that went on until 4:30 in the morning. They absolutely spread out. To be fair, you know, everybody was completely committed to the search. One other significant piece of information is that at 10 o'clock, just before the discovery that Madeline had gone, an Irish couple called the Smiths sighted a man not walking from left to right, but walking away to the left towards the beach, carrying a 3 or 4 year old girl in his arms, again wearing pyjamas. The man was in his mid-30s, height from about 5'7 to 5'9, the so-called Smith sighting. Many years later, it became clear that the Smith sighting, the one, a man about 500 yards away, is much more significant than the so-called Tanner sighting of the man walking from left to right across the top of the street. In fact, eventually Metropolitan Police were to announce that it was highly unlikely that the Tanner sighting was the abductor, simply another holidaymaker collecting his child from the club's creche. Well, at 1 o'clock in the morning, the GNR, the local gendarmerie, begin to think perhaps something's gone on here, and they call the Criminal Investigation Department, the Policia Judiciaire, and at about 2 o'clock in the morning of the 4th of May, a couple of dogs arrive, and by 8 o'clock in the morning, there are 4 search and rescue dogs. And they've started searching waterways, wells, caves, sewers, ruins. Absolutely no sign of Madeleine McCann. There is no doubt at all that this is the worst possible fate that could befall any parent. Losing a child, leaving a child, is an absolutely desperate emotional impact. But now you enter what is very interesting. The Portuguese culture regarded it as inconceivable that any parent would even dream of leaving a child alone in an apartment and going 80 yards away. It was simply inconceivable. How on earth could they do that? I suspect to this day the McGanns ask themselves the same question. But it must have happened several times that week.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
But their friends were doing it too.
It was, you know.
I can see why you would think that those sorts of places were safe as well.
Yeah.
You know. Not excusing it, but I can see. I'm sure lots of people do it in places like
without
that.
Without losing a child. Yeah. Mm. No, I'm not making any judgment here. I'm just making a cultural point that to the local police and to the local criminal investigation department, it was a massive deal. A man called Inspector Amaral was appointed in charge of the case and in charge of the inquiry. But it would be fair to say that they weren't remarkably quick off the mark. There were no border checks, no roadblocks, not until 10 o'clock in the morning. There wasn't an Interpol alert for 5 days. They didn't look at the CCTV from the motorway for 3 days. This was not the quickest of responses. Because I suspect they thought, or at least partly thought, well, she's probably just wandered off. You know, I don't think they were thinking at that moment that this was a genuine abduction.
But if they thought she just wandered off, then they must have thought she'd died.
Well, possibly, but possibly not.
Well, it's, and also, yeah.
Well, there, we now have a contaminated crime scene with little bits of possible evidence, including some saliva. And throughout this incredible commotion, the twins are still sound asleep. They don't wake up. The fact that policemen are marching in and up, sound asleep. Now, here comes the complication. It's the so-called Calpol question. Did Kate and Jerry give Madeline some Calpol to help her sleep? And had they also given the twins Calpol to help them sleep soundly? It was a suggestion put forward originally by the Portuguese police, who came to become convinced that in fact there wasn't an abduction and that Madeline had died by accident and the McCanns had hidden the body.
I've not heard that before.
The so-called Calpol explanation. It was Inspector Amaral who indeed became increasingly convinced that the McCanns were to some extent responsible. Nevertheless, he asks for help from the police in Britain, and the Leicester Constabulary, who are the McCanns' local constabulary, agree to help. But again, here you have a cultural problem. The British police send representatives to Prior de Luche and to the local town where the Criminal Investigation Department are housed. And the Portuguese resent them roundly. They see them as condescending to them and treating them like a colonial power. They see them as sort of colonial. And so things do not get off to the best of starts. There is some bickering about who's got the better forensics and who's got the better forensic science laboratories, and a lot of territorial arguments. And in the end, there's a real clash between the McCanns and Amaral and the Policia Judiciaire. The McCanns suddenly decide, and I can understand completely why they would, decided that they are going to keep Madeline in the public eye. They launch a website. They get involved in a whole series of media ops, photo opportunities. They even go and see the Pope. This, again, brings questions to the Portuguese Criminal Investigation Department's mind. Aren't they just concealing the truth?
By that point, did everybody... How soon was this after she disappeared? Because I remember so much of there just being like a huge, it's just like a massive media thing around them and them as a couple and them everywhere for ages.
Well, it did go on. It's still going on to this day. But essentially, they took a decision that they wanted to keep Madeline in the public eye, and they got a lot of help to do so, including a lot of PR help, which they exploited. Quite rightly and perfectly reasonable. I think the difficulty that a lot of people found, and a lot of, how can one put it, the onlookers found, was they seemed somehow rather stony-faced. I think it's just probably their natures, but there wasn't a lot of emoting. It was really quite controlled. I'm sure Kate was hurting dreadfully, but Jerry's quite strong, you know, and they present this rather firm face to the world, which again, I don't.
I kind of remember her looking like really haggard and
very sad. Absolutely. But there wasn't an awful lot of public weeping and wailing, which again is anti-Portuguese. Again, see it in the background of Portuguese society. Portuguese society, famous for its fado, its melancholia. It's an important point in the background of the case. Nevertheless, time goes on. On the 15th of May, an extraordinary man called Robert Murat, a 34-year-old British-Portuguese property developer who lives with his mum, his elderly mum, about 150 yards away from apartment 5A, is acknowledged as what the Portuguese call an arguido, a prime suspect. He's named as a suspect, partly because he's got himself into the investigation. He's offered his services as an interpreter. You know, he speaks very good Portuguese. And as we've often talked about it, there's nothing more familiar nowadays than the perpetrator insidiously getting into the investigation. In fact, Murat, yes, members of the Tapas 7 were very suspicious of Murat because he was around so much. But it quickly became clear that he was at home with his mother on the night of May the 3rd. And even though they searched the Casa Liliana, which is where he lived with his mum, nothing was ever found. By this point, the McCanns have stayed on in Portugal. And the stories are beginning to emerge of a spate of burglaries in the apartment block in the period running up to the disappearance of Madeleine. But the Polícia Judiciaire are increasingly convinced that there hasn't been an abduction at all and that Kate and Jerry have somehow, there's been an accidental death and Kate and Jerry have covered it up. And so in September 2007, after the introduction of some sniffer dogs who detect blood or appear to detect blood in the apartment 5A and in the boot of a Renault Scenic that the McGanns have hired sometime after the disappearance of Madeleine. The police, the judiciaire, put two and two together and name Kate and Jerry as arguidos, as persons of considerable interest, and they're both interrogated at length. Both deny any involvement. The theory that it might have been an accidental death, but they then had to dispose of the body, is put to them, and they firmly reject it. It's a very tense period. In the end, the McCanns decide that they won't stay in Portugal any longer because they don't think they're being treated fairly. And they take the twins back home to Leicestershire. And it's extraordinary. The Met send two dogs. And again, if you look at a Netflix documentary, there's some extraordinary video evidence of these dogs searching the apartment and indeed looking for the Renault Scenic. But it gradually becomes clear that the Criminal Investigation Department have been over hasty. And Amaral is removed from the case and sent to Faro. And subsequently, the judiciaire declare that the McCanns are not arguidos. In fact, on the 21st of July 2008, the Attorney General in Portugal reveals that there was no, and I emphasise the word no, evidence linking the McCanns or Robert Murat to the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, and the Aguido status was lifted and the case was closed. But of course it wasn't closed. And here comes one of the most extraordinary things about the case. Why was it that the disappearance of this little girl, delightful looking, charming, blonde, created such a worldwide stir? Literally thousands of children go missing every single year. I think Kate McCann at one point even wrote there were hundreds of thousands around the world. But this one captured everyone's attention. The website kept on. The publicity kept on. The McCanns campaigned. And in 2013, Theresa May, then still the Home Secretary, launched Operation Grange, which was a Metropolitan Police inquiry into the disappearance of Madeleine. It was very well sourced. I mean, 29 detectives, 8 civilians, a lot of people. It didn't really get anywhere. They searched again. They searched the local area. They looked down wells. Nothing. And it was gradually, by 2015, it was winding down. There were still 4 or 5 detectives on it, but there was also, and it's important to say this, that we're in the infancy of social media. And the McCanns certainly provoked a storm. And there was an awful lot of anti-McCann Twitter feed. Twitter was only a year or so old when Madeleine disappeared. And that, to some extent, stoked up the furore. And, of course, there were still the people who asked, as the Portuguese had been asking, how on earth could they have left their children on their own that night? Well, there is, of course, as there always is, a development, a further development. In June this year, literally 2 weeks ago, a German, 43-year-old German called Christian, and we'll call him Christian B, who is in prison for drug dealing and also has a rape conviction and a history of attacking children, was identified by the German police as a prime suspect in the abduction of Madeleine McCann. He'd attacked a young girl in the area. He'd been living in Praia da Luz in a number of apartments and a villa. He had a camper van, a Volkswagen camper van, which it would have been all too easy to have put Madeleine in and spirited her away, because, as I said at the beginning, there were no roadblocks for a long time after the abduction. Now we have the German police, the Portuguese police and the British police again refusing really to collaborate. The Portuguese saying, we're not releasing our saliva sample to the German police. Our labs are perfectly good. You can sing for your supper. The British police, the German police say they've written to the McCanns that they fear that Madeleine is dead and they think they have evidence. But the letter never seems to get there because they send the letter care of Scotland Yard. So Kate and Jerry put on their website, we never received the letter. Now, is there a letter? We're no wiser right now. The Germans say there is. McCann say there isn't. Perhaps there is one today. No doubt it'll become clear. What is, however, clear is that this particular man, Christian B, has a track record of attacking children. Has boasted about the fact that he had the ideal equipment to spirit children away and also transport drugs. The VW camper van was eventually discovered in a property that he owned in Germany, and he traded up to a bigger, much bigger Winnebago, a great big thing. What's the truth? We don't know. We do know that the Portuguese knew he was in the area, which perhaps is another bit of needle between the Germans and the Portuguese, because the German prosecutors are saying you knew, and the Portuguese have said we didn't. But in fact, they probably did. It's another of the disagreements between police forces. All we do know is that as of today, towards the middle and end of June 2020, there is still a disagreement about what Christian B is guilty of or not. And that is the reason that the pictures of Madeleine McCann have returned to the front pages, along with the pictures of the said suspect in a German prison. The truth? I wonder if we'll ever know. It is like Mr. Kipper and Susie Lamplugh. It's like Jill Dando. Will we ever really know? I mean, the likelihood is, you know, sad to say, is that Madeleine possibly is no more. It's quite unlikely that she... But there conspiracy theories abound. She was trafficked. Summers was told to, they wanted a child, couldn't have one, so would you go and steal one for us? And she was particularly good looking. I mean, I'm not a great lover of conspiracy theories, as you know. I always believe it's more cock-up than conspiracy, almost always. But that's the story of the disappearance of Madeleine McCann.
Cool. That was really interesting. Thanks, Dad. Good to have a recap over that. I don't really remember any of the details. I just remember all of the media stuff around it.
Well, it was an absolute media circus.
And they just became, like, really disliked.
They did.
Which is such a contrary thing to start disliking a couple that have lost a child. It's everything surrounded it. To get to a position where the public don't like you, it's quite extraordinary.
It is, considering. Well, I said in passing, they're sometimes their demeanour is somehow doesn't encourage you. They look defensive and
yeah, and I suppose to choose to be so public because there's a limited number of people who can be helpful. Do you know what I mean? Even if you make huge, of course, somebody might see somebody who, you know, a girl that looks like Madeleine, you know, in another place and that kind of thing. But there's a limited number of people who were at the place at the time.
Well, Operation Grange, in its as it started out, actually produced a portrait of what Madeleine might look like now. You know, it was actually very interesting. Again, it's on the website, on the Find Madeleine website, which repays going to. It's very interesting. But it's the fact that this case is stuck in the minds of the world is remarkable. I mean, it's also rather chilling too. I mean, the German police are suggesting they believe she's dead. We have no way of knowing. But they're insistent that they have, but they're not going to compromise their case by giving us any details. Those may or may not emerge. But it's a mystery.
I mean, as we all know, though, confession without a body is not necessarily as much of a resolution as one would want it to be anyway.
And he's indicated through his lawyers... Christian B's indicated that he had nothing to do with it.
I felt like it maybe was one of those things where, like, you know, it was like so-and-so said to me in prison that he did blah, blah, blah. You know that?
Well, in fact, this one is Christian B boasted in a bar in Prior to Louche that he could transport children.
Okay.
When he had a drink.
Oh, well, there you go then. Very good. Yeah. Thanks, Dad.
So I'm sorry, it's unresolved, but it is an interesting story.
For sure. Definitely. Well, thank you very much for that.
Pleasure.
And thank you for all of your hard work over the last 13 weeks and all of the weeks and years before then.
Yes, I'm looking forward to the day when we can actually do this together again, because I've got the technology.
You've done a great
well
job
now.
Doing the tech. You've got it almost down pat now, I think, Dad. I feel a bit sad that I'm going to have to come back and do it again. I quite like not having to do it.
Okay, we'll do it remotely.
No, I'm joking. I'll be back, possibly with new systems that are easier.
Okay. Well, most important thing, darling, we should thank all the people that help.
Yes. Thank you very much to our producer, Poppy Damon, who we said is invaluable. We can't do it without you. To my brother, Dan, who does the music. My friend, George, who drew our caricature. To Audio Boom for hosting us. And to Jeffrey for all of his hard work. And as ever, to you, the listeners. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Please keep in touch. And thank you.
Thank you. Absolute heartfelt thank you from me. And as I always say, you know, bad things can happen to good people, so do be careful out there.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Tired of all the bugs in your yard? Enjoy your backyard again with Cutter Backyard Ready to Spray Bug Control at Menards. It kills mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, and other insects fast, controlling them for up to 12 weeks. A 32-ounce Ready to Spray container covers up to 5,000 square feet and is on sale now through July 13th. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.